Hello and welcome back to another episode of Living With Mental Health. It's John again. I've got another episode of a podcast coming for you today. I would just like to thank my supporters, my sponsors that have given me the opportunity to do this. And a special mention goes out to David Robertson's for hooking me up with a guest today. And also, last week I had a major problem with both of my websites, which you can see it down below. And we were up one night till midnight trying to fix it, but the next day he sorted it and we're back up and running again. So thank you, David, for sorting me out. Also, in the YouTube comments, there will be a link to buy me a coffee. Don't feel pressured in doing that. All it is to help me to raise funds, to help me keep the equipment running if there's any breakdowns or I need to get something for the PC or new light or camera. All it is I'm saving it all up to go against that. Or it might even buy me a glass of Pepsi Max. So I'm going to hand over to Sam to give herself a little introduction. And then we will go on from there, people. Over to you, Sam.
Hi, I'm Sam Granger and I'm from Sam Granger Counselling. So I work from Honingham and Norwich and I look after people who've got mental health issues. So people come to me with everything. Specialist areas are probably looking at addiction, abuse, anxieties, grief and work-related stress. And obviously anxieties are quite common these days for lots of people. We live in a society where, well, we just have so much going on that anxiety has hit the roof. So there's lots of people coming through the doors at the moment. And my job is to support them through from the beginning to the end till they feel better and they can move forward themselves. So that's who I am. I was a nurse before, so I will tell you that. I spent 28 years in the NHS and I've just moved to full-time practice this week.
Nice one. I think I was about 20 or 21 and I started working in the care homes.
Yeah.
For adults with learning disabilities. I did a little bit in the elderly, but I suited the learning adults with learning disabilities better than I did the elderly. But
yeah.
I wish I would have learned more about it when I left school and not take a year out after leaving school, because I think I would have had a mega career. Yes, that's unfortunately what caused a lot of my mental health and my relapse in 2018, but it is the most awarding job there, I think, and I loved it. Half of my pay was to be sensible and professional, and then the other half of my pay, like I say to people, is just to muck around and make sure the residents have fun.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. I said that to a nurse once when my granddad was in hospital, and she went, "I'm going to tell my sister that." And I went, "Go on." And the sister come back to me. She went, "I'm going to implement what you said." That was a healthcare assistant or nurse that come up and I said it to.
Yeah.
And the sister come over to speak to me and the sister was like, "I'm going to implement what you said to them and actually lift the spirits up by that." So go for it. So it helped.
Yeah. Well, I said I feel quite lucky because I've had two really good jobs. So the nursing's been brilliant, but now I'm moving into something that actually I think you can get more satisfaction from, because you're seeing one person on a one-to-one level for some time and seeing them through a journey, which is great.
Definitely. I mentioned before we went live, I did a year of the Wave project with Mind. But before then, if I didn't get the chance to have the 12-week sessions with a counsellor beforehand, I don't think I'd have been ready to make that step. And the lady who I had the counselling with, I think we instantly clicked.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I will say to people. Don't be afraid. If you don't get a good vibe, either try again or go and find someone else until you get that right. Because I've got a book somewhere, I can't remember the author of it, and he says finding the right therapist is like dating. You have good and you have bad.
But also it's sometimes about your personality or what you want. Yeah. So you don't always get on with everybody. It might be that they're the right therapist for somebody, but not for somebody else. So it really is about getting that rapport, isn't it?
Yeah. I personally didn't think I was going to have a good rapport with this lady when I first started. But once the session went in and her body language was positive, it felt welcoming. Yeah. And I'm a big one for body language. And when the person, and like, she listened to me.
Yeah.
Now that's a big win. And I felt safe, so I opened up more. So I got, benefited. That's the word. I got more out of the sessions because I was able to put more in.
Yeah.
What I say to people is you've got to remember we're all unique and individual. Don't judge yourself by someone else that you know is going through counselling and they're having a better experience than you. It's just that we all learn in different ways. We're all unique and individual.
That's very true.
Oh, glad that. I feel like we've done half the podcast already.
Yeah, we have.
We haven't. I do tend to go off on tendencies, so just be warned. My first question to you, Sam, is, and as I tell everyone before coming on, I personally don't think there's no right or wrong answer. What does mental health mean to you?
Okay. So, first of all, I think mental health is about how you see how you are in yourself. So we can have poor mental health and we can have good mental health. Even if we have a mental health condition, I think it's being able to function with it in a positive way. So having a positive mindset, having ways of managing your mental health. So good mental health isn't always about being somebody who's not got anything wrong with them, because I think everybody has got issues. Everybody has good days and bad days.
Definitely.
So it doesn't matter. It's about having the tools to function in a good way. And that's what good mental health means to me, having strategies to move you forward. So even when you're feeling low, you can put a positive spin on it and you can bring yourself out of that hole that you're falling into.
Yeah, I like what you said about there's good mental health and there's bad mental health.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was before COVID or after COVID. I'd done a couple of talks and with another person that I used to work closely to with. Mm. And I used to stand up in front of the room and I'd walk on a scale and was sort of like, you could be in a good place.
Mm.
But physically you're unwell and you've still got good mental health, but you can be in a bad place, but your mental health's still good, if that makes sense.
Mm.
And I used to get my exercise in because she used to do about 5 or 6 different versions of making me walk on up and down this invisible line, I called it. But what surprised me is a lot of people found that it was hard to understand that you could be in a bad place but still have good mental health. And the other way around, you'd be in a good place but have bad mental health. And what shocked me was how many people found that hard to believe.
Yeah. The other thing is good mental health is a learned thing. So I always remember a letter I sort of read. And it was a letter written by somebody who'd been through a journey. And the letter said something like, I'm walking down the road and it's got a hole in it. So I walk down the road, but I fall down the hole. I walk down the road again and I fall down the hole. I'm going to walk down the road this time and I'm going to go round the hole. I'm going to walk down a different road. Because they've learned to sort of get better. And I that letter sticks with me as a really good analogy of sort of how we learn to move forward with our mental health.
Yeah.
And sort of it can be that you make mistakes along the way. It's not always linear. It's up and down.
Yes, I love that. When I had my relapse in 2018, I wanted to recover like that. Straight next day, I wanted to recover. But after seeing the uncle doctor on the Sunday, I don't remember much about the day. We went back to the doctors on the Monday because still I wasn't in a good place. And I can remember this clearly. We went in and saw the nurse practitioner. Now, we had a really, me and my partner and the nurse practitioner had a really good relationship. The nurse practitioner turned around to me and went, "You look like shit." But she knew, I could trust her to say that.
Yeah.
And from then, once I got into the services, I'd done a thing called Recovery College. And then I learned about recovery ain't going to happen overnight. It's going to take a while to grow. And the one thing I can't remember if it was a video or it was a PowerPoint presentation we saw. Mm-hmm. And it said about your recovery journey is not a straight road. It's a long, windy one. And there'll be obstacles and blockages in the way. But to get round them and to get past them, you learn something every time. To learn something that you've put in place to help you will help you, might not help you that time, but something else you try will work. And then vice versa, the next time, that might be the different way round. And you do that one thing that didn't work last time and it works and you get round again.
Yeah, it's really funny. I had somebody in yesterday, John, and they were sort of, I just want a quick fix. I came last week and this week I just want to be better. And I said, well, unfortunately, it just doesn't work like that. You can't, you know, when you come in with something that's been bothering you for a long time and that's pressing down on you a long time, it can't just be a quick fix. You can't just wake up tomorrow. I can't wave my magic wand and all of a sudden it's all going to be perfect the next day. We're going to have to sort of unpeel the onion, if you like, slowly.
Yeah.
A bit by bit.
And that is so right. It's no good rushing into things because for me, I won't learn anything if I go full steam ahead. If I take a step back and then go in, then I'm going to get the full benefit from it. That's awesome. I love that you brought that up. I really do, because that's something I tell people all the time, is recovery is not a straight journey. There's obstacles and you work around them.
I think we live in a society where everybody wants a quick fix.
Yeah.
We're used to everything instant.
Because the quick fix is if you go and see your GP, most GPs will just hand out medication when that's not the answer. Mm-mm. And I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, it got brought out that the doctors need to be doing more social prescribing and more commit instead of giving medications. Well, I wrote something on Twitter, I think it was, and with half an hour, I had the iNewspaper asking me to make an article, like a little comment section about what I thought. She rung me up, I told her what I thought, and I got a piece in the iPaper. I was buzzing. That's my first proper piece in a national newspaper. But there's still, and I sit with the local commissioners, ICB level, and we talk about how we can improve services and stuff like that. And that's the one thing me and all the other experts by experience mention is, do not forget there's a holistic approach. Oh, I'm quite impressed. I've just said a big word. That's a shocker for me. I'm going to bring us, my next subject is, I've called this episode Helping Techniques. Now, I first came across you when I saw your LinkedIn post about box breathing. Now, I got taught about box breathing at Recovery College when I was at school. I don't know if she recognised me or not, but that's my deputy year head was on the same course as I was, and she mentioned about box breathing then. Now, if you want to explain it, I'll quite happily do it, because there's some more techniques that I don't know we can use, and I want to just show them. And
okay,
so yeah,
are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So you've got a box, so you want to trace the box while you're doing the breathing. So you want to imagine that you're tracing around the box while you're doing the breathing, but you can close your eyes when you do it. You're breathing in for four and you're drawing a line up to the top. And then you're going across and you're holding it for four. And then you're breathing out for four as you come down the box. And then you're holding it for four. And you can repeat this for about a minute or two until it brings your body back down to a relaxed level. So breathing in for four, across for holding across for four, breathing out, holding. And you just keep doing this, keep drawing the box. And eventually your body will start to relax, your heart rate will go down, and you'll feel much calmer. So that's one of the first methods. The other breathing method you can use, and I don't know if you've done this one, is the balloon breathing. So imagine you've got a balloon in your belly. So you imagine you've got a balloon in your belly, and that balloon's inflating and deflating. And you just imagine that balloon inflating and deflating. And then your body starts to relax as you imagine that balloon inflating and deflating.
That's a big balloon.
It is a big balloon, isn't it?
I've not heard of that one, actually. That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's just called balloon breathing. Well, I've named it balloon breathing. So your abdomen rises on the in-breath and falls on the out-breath. So as the balloon inflates and then deflates.
That's probably one of the most simplest ones to do as well.
Yeah. Because you don't have to think about the going around the box. No. You just imagine the balloon going still, up and down.
I'm still doing it, and I'm not even really noticing I'm doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I like that one. I'm going to be adding that to my tools.
There's ratio breathing as well. So that's the 4-7-8 method. So you count to four.
I've heard of this, but I've never actually seen it done. So I don't know what it is.
More complicated. Count to four as you take a slow, deep breath in. Hold your breath for seven and breathe out for eight. Because that it's about emptying the lungs out so you feel completely at ease.
I like that one as well.
Breathe in for four. Hold your breath for seven. And breathe out for eight.
Yeah, I like that one.
And then I've got one more breathing technique that I use quite like. And this is probably one of my favourites. The balloon is one of my favourites, but I quite like this. And that's just closing your eyes and breathing in the colour of calm and breathing out the colour of anxiety. So choosing two colours, think of what colour is calm to you and breathing in that colour. And thinking what colour anxiety is to you and breathing out that colour. So you're bringing in the calm and you're getting rid of the anxiety.
I like that.
And if you can visualize your color, it's really
good. Yeah,
I was. I have lots of people who bring up really sort of, everybody's got a color and it's always really different. But what the colors that are really popular when doing that are green. And funnily enough, a pinky orange color comes up quite a lot. Breathing out anxiety. Yeah, breathing out anxiety. A lot of people choose red or black.
Mine was red.
Yeah, red or blue. Negative colour.
That's interesting, that is. I've got one for you. I don't know if you saw it mentioned on my Facebook post that David tagged you in. My camera's gonna pick up my hand. But you
I
go,
can see it.
Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I told someone that first mentioned that one to me to shut up. That's not going to work. And I went back a week later and told them thank you, because it did. It distracted me enough to get me out of my panic attack.
Yeah. The other thing is the disgrounding technique, the distraction technique. So you sit in your chair, and what you do is you stimulate your vagus nerve so it completely relaxes you. That's part of your parasympathetic nervous system. So your sympathetic nervous system is what's causing your anxiety to drive. So you want to calm it by stimulating the parasympathetic, because they're like yin and yang almost.
Yeah.
So you look around and you name five things you can see. And then you name five things that are coming around you that you can feel, and you might be able to feel them. And then three things you can hear. What can you hear? It might just be the ticking of a clock. It might be your heart beating because you're being quiet. If you are in a place where you can be, you can just do those three. But if you can see things, you can smell. Name two things you can smell. And one thing you can taste.
I'm going to give you an example of that. Yeah. When before we went live to record, I used to be a part of a project at Borough Castle around the old Roman fort. Mm. And I would, when we get together and would have our lunch on the like the field in between the old walls, I would lay there and people would just leave me, because they didn't at first, but they knew that was me just zoning out. And like, I was from the ground up, I was bringing the new growth through the ground, and then I was bringing out what was bad in me. And I would shut my eyes and then open them, shut my eyes, then open them. And that was one of the most relaxing things. And then someone mentioned to me about what you just said about name three things or five things. So I would say to people, I could hear people rustling the crisp packets or the sandwich, eating the sandwiches. And then I'd hear a bird in the distance, might hear the odd dog bark as they're walking past or something. And then smells, all the different smells we got, because we're in a Roman fort and we're not far from the river. And you just got, it was, the sensory was just absolutely amazing. And I was there a couple of weeks ago, and the weather hasn't been great in East Anglia, to be fair. But the ground was dry enough for me to lay down, and I just took a couple of minutes and I felt relaxed and calmed and
able to calm.
Yeah, definitely. It was one of them 2 years, or just over 2 years, because COVID hit. And they managed to extend the program, the project, a little bit. It was one of the best projects I've ever been involved with. And although we were, all of us had mental health, the topic wasn't always about mental health.
Yeah.
We had some random discussions. A lot Games of Thrones had not long just come out, and we were talking about Games of Thrones. And we just, it was just blinding, absolutely mental. You weren't in them four walls with a mental health practitioner or nurse, just kept writing down what you're telling them, and then keep looking at the clock to make sure they're not running late on you. We all got something out of that project, and we did a film. We won some money to do a film about it. And there's two blokes on there from Great Yarmouth. Now they joined the project late. They wasn't judged, and they say about not being judged, and they felt welcome to the group. And they said they didn't want to get out of bed, but when the day came around to go around the fort, they were getting out of bed to get ready. And I just loved it. That's what it meant to them, because you wouldn't have thought they would have stood on camera and done a piece like that. And it's just like, yeah, well done to you two for getting out like that. My first session there, I didn't think I was going to go back if it wasn't me. But after speaking to my partner and giving it another go, I'm now a trustee of one of the organisations that ran the project. and they call it culture therapy.
Yeah.
And it is one of the best experiences of therapy I've ever had.
Being outside. That's a bit like walk and talk therapy, isn't it? Going outside in nature and walking and talking.
I would have laughed at you. I'm not lying. I would have laughed at you and said that's a load of balls before starting that.
Yeah.
But honestly, one of the best things I ever did, that was. And we one week we were actually down walking along the riverbed of the Thames in London, and seeing London from down from that angle was magic. It was just
amazing.
Yeah, I've done some random stuff with them. That's like arts and crafts. I would be the first person to person about doing arts and crafts. But once I'd done it, I got a sense of pride.
Yeah.
Actually, I just did that. I felt good about myself.
And it is sometimes about making yourself feel good about yourself as well. So if you want, I've got another technique about that.
Go on.
So if you want to feel, if somebody's feeling bad about themselves, a good way of doing it is taking themselves out of the picture. So they're not looking at themselves. They're looking at it from somebody else's perspective. So I get people to imagine they're looking in a mirror, like a mirror in films, those two-way mirrors. Okay. And somebody they love or somebody they like a lot is sitting behind the mirror. And they're asking them to give the, what would they say about that person? What would that person say about you if they were looking at you in the mirror? Ooh, why then can't you believe that about yourself? Why can't you believe that about yourself? And that's it's quite powerful that I've had a lot of tears from people when they're thinking about that, because they suddenly realize what other people would say. And they suddenly realize that actually they should actually be able to say that about themselves. And that can sometimes open up a door for somebody to walk through and see.
That's quite powerful.
It's quite powerful. Yeah. Another one is getting the picture of yourself how you don't want to be. So this is based on neurolinguistic programming and is quite a common technique, actually. Seeing yourself how you don't want to be and making it black and white and ugly, shrinking it. Seeing yourself how you do want to be and it's all colorful and bright and shrinking it. And now, and you should do this with your eyes closed, down your arm and into your hand, you've got a tennis ball. The old picture comes up and it's turned to glass, the black and white ugly picture. And the tennis ball has turned into a rock. And in your mind, you throw the rock at the glass until all the glass is broken and the picture is shattered. And the new picture comes back up and you step into it and walk off.
You've
got rid of all the negativity.
I like that one. Now, people, that I've never heard of either of them, what Sam just said. And in my head, I can already picture myself doing them because I think they will help me loads.
Yeah.
I'm going to start bringing this to the end, Sam, because I feel like I could probably go on for another hour or two with you.
So could I.
I honestly do. And one of my questions I always ask at the end of a podcast is, what bit of advice would you give someone? And I'm going to be cheeky here and get three out of you, because you were a nurse and now you've gone into counselling. So what bit of advice would you give to someone that wants to get into being a career of a nurse or career of counselling? And then what bit of advice would you give to someone that is going through a hard time?
Okay. For someone to go into nursing, you're asking the wrong. No, you're not asking the wrong person. You obviously need to sort of, most people think they need to do a degree at the moment, but a good way of sometimes doing it, because not everybody can afford to go to university these days. So another good way of doing it is going to work as a healthcare assistant first, and then you can progress on to being something called a trainee nursing associate, and then you can go on to do your nursing. It's long-winded, but you're in the caring profession and you're learning in steps. So that's one way of doing it. The other way is obviously having to go to uni and do all that to become a counsellor, there are lots of part-time courses that you can do while you're working, but it's good to have a good look around to make sure that they're the right course for you and that they are an accredited course, because there are lots of courses that are not. So doing a six-week course in counselling is not going to make you a counsellor. The courses are 3 to 4 years of length to be able to be practising, because you have to do your supervision, you have to do your placement hours, and you have to be competent because you're dealing with people's lives at the end of the day in another way. So a nurse is dealing with the physical, except if they're a mental health nurse, of course, but a counsellor is dealing with somebody's mental health, and if you're not trained, you can do more damage than good.
Definitely.
And
I'm just going to jump in there and say there's a lot of people that shouldn't be in the mental health industry.
There probably are. And what was the last question, Tom?
What would you give to one bit of advice to someone that is struggling and going through a hard time and needs to reach out?
To get help, to talk. The main thing is connection, and that can often be the hardest thing to do when you're in a hole. But even it doesn't have to be a professional, even if it's your best friend and you just want you just need to reach out and get some help and talk. Talking is the biggest barrier to overcome, because a lot of people are embarrassed. They feel embarrassed. They feel a shame a lot of the time. And opening up is a difficult thing. But I get a lot of people that come in, and like you said, I would never have done this. I thought it was... Yeah. And I get a lot of people who go, I was a bit dubious about this, but actually, and so they'll still be coming 3 months later because they're finding it therapeutic and just having that release to get rid of all the things definitely. That are going on. Yeah, definitely.
That I once again, I've already said it for a couple of things that we've said in this episode. Before I had my psychotic break when I was in 2018, I didn't reach out. Look where it got me. And now I've learned to reach out is the best thing you can do. And I reach out all the time if I'm struggling.
Yeah.
There's people I can reach out to left, right and centre. I know all the service details if I need to get in contact with them. But touch wood, I'm in a better place now. So
good. A pleasing thing for me is my client base is 50-50 men and women, and that's quite a big thing, because men that's often good. But I've got 50-50 men and women.
The Lift Loud for Danny volunteer, and the group I volunteer for on a Thursday night, they said before COVID they had a lot of women turn up. After COVID, it seems to be a lot of men.
Yeah.
We still have ladies turn up, but it's more men.
Mm. That's a good thing, because it means they're starting to open up and speak, isn't it?
Definitely. I just want to say a big thank you to Sam for coming on this podcast. Like I said, I could go on for a couple more hours, but you're not going to sit and watch 2 hours of me dribble on. So I'll let Sam say bye.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
And I will see you in the next one. Have a good weekend, everybody.